Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. In this final hour, I'm going to be laying out a timeline of the Iran conflict, the latest flare-up of the Iran conflict. Now that we ostensibly are in some sort of a pause that doesn't really exist, but we'll use it as an excuse to pause ourselves and go back and look at how we got here and see if we can't identify some patterns over the last 39 days. I do want to remind you that thealexjonesstore.com is where you go to support us. And it's so funny because I was always saying this, and now I hear Alex saying it too, where I'm like, 72% off? That doesn't even make sense. How are we giving people 72% off? This is genuinely crazy and irresponsible of us. But hey, go for it. Take advantage of it. I don't know. We're selling it. You might as well buy it. But it's funny because even Alex now is like, wait, what? 72% off? This is nuts. But yeah, Methylene Blue tincture, 72% off when you sign up for the subscription. You lock it in for life. As long as you stay subscribed, this deal will not last long because it can't. So go now, take advantage of it, and lock in your Ultra Methylene Blue basically at cost, more or less, forever. Sign up for the regular delivery. And of course, we have a new InfoWars cooler bundle that can be purchased for just $99. It regularly sells for $199.97. You're saving over $100 on this. It's 50% off. VIP members take an additional $20 off. It's the InfoWars Ultimate Portable Cooler. It's rugged, insulated, and built to keep your drinks cold for hours. Plus, InfoWars Signature Edition polarized sunglasses and limited edition InfoWars koozies. And of course, we are not long for this world, so get your InfoWars branded merchandise now while you still can. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. So, where to start the Iran timeline? Do we start it 47 years ago, like so many seem to think that all of this began? Do we start it even earlier than that? Do we start it with the Shah or the overthrow of the Shah, the CIA activity? Do we go back farther than that? I mean, do we talk about, you know, the British Petroleum's involvement in Iran? Do we talk about any of that? Let's just, I guess, for the sake of keeping this an hour, let's just go back to June of last year after Operation Midnight Hammer. They claimed it was a big success, but it changed things. It accelerated things in a big way. One of the things that occurred after Operation Midnight Hammer is that Ayatollah Khomeini removed a restriction he'd previously had on production of missiles, keeping missiles under 2,000-mile range, things like that. Basically said, hey, they're coming after us. It's time to suspend negotiations and just get ready for a war, because they knew it was coming after Operation Midnight Hammer. And so did Israel and America. And so for about 6 months after Operation Midnight Hammer, you had Iran frantically building up their ballistic and drone building, manufacturing, storage, and launching capabilities, while you had Israel and America attempting to foment rebellion inside Iran for the eventual overthrow there. And we know this is the case because even before the Operation Epstein's Fury broke out in February 28th of this year, you had U.S. Secretary of the U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent claiming responsibility for the uprisings that occurred in Iran. So we can go to 206 here on the Iran timeline. Here is Scott Bessent explaining that the, you know, rebellion, the protests, and the riots that occurred in Iran, they weren't exactly naturally occurring. They were manufactured by us. Let's watch.
The Treasury, and what we have done is created a dollar shortage in the country. At a speech at the Economic Club of New York in March, I outlined the strategy. It came to a swift and, I would say, grand culmination in December when one of the largest banks in Iran went under, there was a run on the bank. The central bank had to print money. The Iranian currency went into free fall. Inflation exploded. And hence, we have seen the Iranian people out on the street. We will continue monitoring all the partners, all the Iranian partners. The good news, Senator, is that we have seen, and we can see it with our fencing.
All right. So U.S. says it caused a dollar shortage to trigger Iran protests. What that means? Well, what it means is that when we then go and say the Iranian people are so unhappy with their leadership, we must free them. It's completely dishonest, because the reason they're unhappy is because of us. So we create the conditions to make them unhappy. And then Israel sends in a bunch of Mossad agents to try to get the protesters to commit violence, or just they just do commit violence against the state security, who then fires back. So then we can say, oh, look, they killed all their people. Now we have to go in to save their people. This is all games. This is all smoke and mirrors. But it's confirmed at this point. And this is why it's worth it to go, you know, back over the timeline, because at the time we could sit here and go, I don't think these riots are real. I think this is Mossad doing this. We could look at the Starlink, you know, things that were captured. We could look at, you know, some of the statements made by Iran that they were accusing them of that, but we didn't really know. But then a couple weeks later, you've got the New York Times and the Times of Israel all reporting things like this. Netanyahu is frustrated that Mossad promise to instigate Iran uprising has fallen short. So now we can go back and go, okay, during those riots, during that supposed uprising, that was all manufactured. It was manufactured in one case by our economic warfare against them, which, by the way, Scott Bessent was brought in to do. He became an expert at this by working under the world-renowned expert in collapsing economies economically, George Soros. So he was a George Soros employee that was brought into the Treasury specifically to wage economic warfare against Iran to inspire the riots that could then be infiltrated by Mossad to cause the chaos that would lead us going to war. And this is all very sophisticated, but simple at the end of the day. It's not all that complicated. But now we can go back and say, okay, now we know for absolute certain that those riots, the protests, they were fake. They were manufactured. They were outside forces. They were foreign agitators going into Iran to cause the chaos that we could then take advantage of. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu embraced a Mossad plan to spark a popular uprising at the start of the Iran war and is frustrated that those promises have not come to pass, according to a new report. A report in the New York Times published Sunday, but this was back in March 23rd. Citing current and former U.S. and Israeli intelligence officials, says Netanyahu discussed the plan when persuading U.S. President Donald Trump to go to war against the Islamic Republic. And we'll get to that in just a second. But again, all throughout the chaotic time period, here's the New York Times story. Israel thought it could spur rebellion inside Iran. That hasn't happened. Okay. And they'll present this as if it's like, we wanted to help the poor downtrodden of Iran. And nah, darn it, it just didn't happen. No. They wanted to manufacture a color revolution in Iran to overthrow the Iranian government. These are outside forces infiltrating, subverting, and trying to destroy. Okay. Very different, you know, vibe than, oh my gosh, the people of Iran want freedom. Let's go help them. Then we're starving the people of Iran. They're so angry that we're starving them that we're going to use that to kill a bunch of them to justify our invasion and overthrow of their government. Totally crazy. And when you get to the numbers that are claimed, that now it's 45,000. I don't know. It was 32,000 for a while. Now it's 45,000. Trump's like, maybe 60,000. I don't know. I can make up any number. They're all just completely manufactured. Okay. It just doesn't exist. They just came up with these numbers out of nowhere. I tried to find like where they actually came from, and they were literally just made up. Ayatollah Khomeini did acknowledge that several thousands of Iranians had been killed since protests started in late December among shopkeepers in downtown Tehran before gradually spreading to big and small cities. That confirmation is unusual because Khomeini typically avoids commenting on death tolls during previous protests in Iran over the years, but they did admit to something like 3,000 people dying as a consequence of this. But of course, if Mossad is there arming the protesters, it's kind of hard to, you know, see this as just, you know, the big bad tyrants mowing down peaceful protesters. They weren't. They were Mossad agents, or they were being tricked by Mossad agents into being the useful idiots of an overthrow. So it's like, what are you supposed to do? Let them do that? I don't know. I don't know if Iran killed these people or if it was Mossad killing them to blame on Iran. I mean, it's acknowledged that Mossad was behind these riots. So that throws all everything that we know about it into confusion and suspicion. But basically, they just made up numbers. The latest figures of the widely recited human rights activist news agency based in the U.S. says more than 3,300 deaths have been confirmed and over 4,300 are being investigated. So they say that the official number is 3,300. Meanwhile, somebody just decided to multiply that by 10 and claim that that was the actual number. So these numbers don't make sense. So again, this is all just the groundwork. This is the background, just knowing that the protests were a lie, the riots were a lie, the death tolls were a lie. All of this was a lie designed to convince you that we had to go to war with Iran. So then you get to about a week before the attack happens, about 2 weeks before, I should say. And again, this is why we're going back in time, because at the time we didn't know this was going on. We had suspicions and we could guess more or less that we'd be going to war in Iran. But now we have the actual detailed account of what occurred in the run-up for the 2 weeks before the actual assault on Iran. It, of course, is in a New York Times article called How Trump Took the U.S. to War with Iran. And it talks about Benjamin Netanyahu arriving at the White House just before 11 a.m. on February 11th. The Israeli leader, who'd been pressing for months, or you could say decades, for the U.S. to agree to a major assault in Iran, was whisked inside with little ceremony out of view of reporters, primed for one of the most high-stakes moments of his long career. It was just, it's just him versus the President of the United States. Who is going to win the face-off? And of course, it's Netanyahu. Basically, you had everybody involved in the war there. You had General Dan Kane. You had Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. You had Marco Rubio, Susie Wiles, the head of Mossad, and Benjamin Netanyahu. And of course, the way they describe it is Netanyahu's in the center, sort of at the head of the table, with everybody surrounding him. Actually make a point that Trump did not sit in his usual seat at the head of the table, which is symbolic and probably more important than not. The only person that wasn't there at the time just so happened to be J.D. Vance. You think that was an accident? I don't believe you. J.D. Vance was in Azerbaijan, and the meeting had been scheduled on such short notice he was unable to make it back in time, I'm sure. No, he was deliberately excluded because they knew he wouldn't be down with it, or because they wanted to insulate him from the effects of the war so that they could preserve his political career later. I'm open to either suggestion. In the Situation Room on February 11th, Mr. Netanyahu made a hard sell, suggesting that Iran was ripe for regime change and expressing the belief that a joint U.S.-Israeli mission could finally bring an end to the Islamic Republic. That, of course, was a lie. Mr. Netanyahu and his team outlined conditions they portrayed as pointing to near-certain victory. Iran's ballistic missile program could be destroyed in a few weeks, the regime would be so weakened that it could not choke off the Strait of Hormuz, and the likelihood that Iran would land blows against U.S. interests in neighboring countries was addressed as minimal. Yeah. What are they going to do? Bomb Qatar? It's never going to happen, right? What are they going to do? Bomb Saudi Arabia? They would never. Well, besides Mossad's intelligence, Mossad's intelligence indicated that street protests inside Iran would begin again with the impotence. Yeah. Like, we think it's going to begin again as they load their guns, with the impetus of the Israeli spy agency helping to foment riots and rebellion. An intense bombing campaign could foster the conditions for the Iranian opposition to overthrow the regime. The Israelis also raised the prospect of Iranian Kurdish fighters crossing the border from Iraq to open the ground front in the northwest, further stretching the regime's forces and accelerating its collapse. But of course, they had no ability to actually bring that to fruition and talk to the Kurds about it at all. They're just lying. This is just a recitation of lies. Mr. Netanyahu's presentations and Mr. Trump's positive response to them created an urgent task for the U.S. intelligence community, and overnight, analysts worked to assess the viability of what the Israeli team had presented to the president. The U.S. officials assessed, the intelligence officials came back the next day with their assessment. They assessed that the first two objectives were achievable with American intelligence and military power. They assessed that third and fourth parts of Mr. Netanyahu's pitch, which included the possibility of the Kurds mounting a ground invasion of Iran, they said these were detached from reality. Basically, as four parts, it was the decapitation, the killing the Ayatollah, crippling Iran's capacity to project power. Third is the uprising inside Iran, and fourth is regime change. So they're like, those first two we could do, but those second two are unachievable. They're impossible. They are, quote unquote, detached from reality. When Mr. Trump joined that meeting, Mr. Ratcliffe, head of the CIA, briefed him on the assessment with CIA that the CIA director used one word to describe the Israeli prime minister's regime change scenario, quote unquote, farcical. At that point, Mr. Rubio turned to General Kane. General, what do you think? General Kane responded, sir, this is, in my experience, standard operating procedure for the Israelis. They oversell, and their plans are not always well-developed. They know they need us, and that's why they're hard-selling. Mr. Trump quickly weighed the assessment. Regime change, he said, would be, quote-unquote, their problem. It was unclear whether he was referring to the Israelis or the Iranian people, but the bottom line was that his decision on whether to go to war against Iran or not would hinge on whether parts 3 and 4 of Mr. Netanyahu's presentation were achievable. He remained very interested in accomplishing parts 1 and 2, killing the Ayatollah and Iran's top leaders and dismantling the Iranian military. General Kane, the man who Trump likes to refer to as Raisin Kane, had impressed the president years earlier by telling him the Islamic State could be defeated far more quickly than others had projected. Mr. Trump rewarded that confidence by elevating the general, who'd been an Air Force pilot, to be his top military advisor. General Kane was not a political loyalist, and he had serious concerns about the war with Iran, but he was very cautious in the way he presented his views to the president. So this is back on February 11th and 12th. They basically make the decision to go to war. And so from that point until the 28th, you can assume that they are prepared to go to war. They are putting things in place, and they are stringing the Iranians along, knowing that the agreement would never actually be finalized or achieved. And again, you can read all of the sordid details in this New York Times article. And of course, a lot of the, take it with a grain of salt if you want. It is the New York Times. And I have the feeling that as this becomes more and more of a political liability, you are going to see more and more people in the Trump administration claiming I was against this the whole time, as we see in the New York Times article. Oh, I told him it was BS early on, but not with enough force or, you know, motive to actually stop it from happening. So from the 12th to the 28th, you have the ongoing Iranian talks, and they've been going on for a while. But of course, they were reaching a climax of one sort or the other. And we were basically told that because the talks had failed, that's why we had to go attack Iran. We didn't believe them, or they weren't giving us anything. Basically, we tried and we got to the end of our diplomatic rope, and so we had to attack. But later, it was revealed that there were British attachés as a part of the negotiations that were there and revealed that Iran actually was willing to give Trump everything he wanted, more or less. Everything that we have now failed to achieve through over a month of war. Things like no longer enriching uranium, or at least promising not to try to make a bomb with it. All sorts of stuff that we claimed we couldn't get. They were untrustworthy. They were intractable. We had to go to war with them to stop their developing their enrichment of uranium. But we could have done that diplomatically. The offer was on the table, but we decided 3 weeks before that war would be the answer. So let's go now to clip 227 here. So this was David Rode posted this, the British attaché, talking about how Iran was willing to give up all of its enriched uranium, which is the goal of all of this, apparently. And that's the one persistent goal that's been, you know, talked about by the Trump administration. We have to stop the uranium. They cannot get a bomb. But we could have achieved that 40 days ago with a signature on a piece of paper and a shaking of hands. We went a different direction. That hasn't worked and only made things worse. Here's the British attaché talking about what Iran had on the table when we decided to attack.
Iran offered to give away all of its enriched uranium during the peace talks. And hours later, the U.S. started dropping bombs. And The Guardian broke yesterday that there were British officials, the British National Security Advisor was present in Geneva during that last round of talks. The British were surprised by the Iranian offer. They thought it was credible. They thought the talks should continue. And the British were shocked when the Trump administration started bombing Iran hours later.
Okay, so this whole war was unnecessary. So the ultimate goal of the war that they keep telling us was right there, sitting on the table, ready to be grasped. We chose war instead. So now that goal that was imminently available to us is now farther than it ever has been before as a consequence of this utterly ill-advised and stupid war. Here's Trump making the war announcement on the 28th of February. This is how we learned that we were now in war with Iran. Let's watch.
A short time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran. Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people. I'll say it again. They can never have a nuclear weapon. For these reasons, the United States military is undertaking a massive and ongoing operation to prevent this very wicked, radical dictatorship from threatening America and our core national security interests. We are going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated. We are going to annihilate their navy. We are going to ensure that the region's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region or the world. This regime will soon learn that no one should challenge the strength and might of the United States Armed Forces. The lives of courageous American heroes may be lost, and we may have casualties. That often happens in war. Finally, to the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will be probably your only chance for generations. For many years, you have asked for America's help, but you never got it. No president was willing to do what I am willing to do tonight.
So that's Trump announcing it on February 28th. He, of course, had decided on this course of action about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, and despite the willingness of Iran to meet us in the middle on negotiations and end this in a peaceful and diplomatic way, Trump, with the urging and assurance of Netanyahu against the advice of his entire cabinet, decided to go to war anyway. So we'll pick it up there. We've laid the groundwork now, and now we'll pick up on February 28th. And how things went off the rails from there. And so far, I'm keeping track. So far, we've heard that this war is about defending the American people, Iran never getting a nuke, and freeing the Iranian people. How long will these three goals last? Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance.